Hey, this is James from StrongPunk.com.
Couch Potato Mike.
Hello there, children.
There's no kids here, Mike.
How's it going?
You know, it's going pretty good. So, this week, I finally put in, not the complete system, but I finally installed the first part of my running water system. So I've got the component to hook up the hot water. I've got a rain barrel water pump. So the part that I did was hook up, install the plug on the water pump, the SureFlow electric AC, not DC. I specifically looked around for that, and the SureFlow model that I got was supposed to be the quietest or a quieter one. There is still some minor hammering, and I need to get the whatever that part is. There's a part like a little tiny holding tank, and I'm probably butchering terminology here, but there's like a little tank thing to reduce and eliminate hammering. I didn't get it because it was $40, and I wanted to like slap this together real quick to see if it worked. It does. I've got just a piece of like poly tubing running into a 6-gallon water container, which is what I used to use for like my water storage, my water, like daily water usage, which is, you know, no problem for me, but Serenity couldn't pick them up usually, especially if they're full, and then she would spill water all over the place. Yeah. So I've just got the inlet valve running into one of those, and the rest is just running to the sink, and mostly it works. It kind of tastes like, not quite water hose, but like that plastic water taste. Like if you've ever like squirted yourself in the face with a plastic like water squirt gun, like that plastic water taste, that's what it tastes like. Not terrible. It makes good coffee, you know, and it's a godsend for like cleaning out stuff and doing dishes and all the stuff that like you take for granted for having running water. Yeah, it's nice. The poly tubing, so I want to replace the poly tubing with actual tubing, and I'm going to have to run it out to the rain barrel eventually. The poly tubing, another effect of that is it's sort of bending and crimping a little bit, which is reducing water flow. Kind of annoying. But all that said, I have running water. I've washed my hands. I've washed out dishes. Life is good. Life is good. And it's only getting better. So yeah, it's that, another sort of life dream kind of thing that when I created this podcast, I had 3 dream guests, which, to be honest, I've not even attempted to get them on the show. My alarm clock is going off. Sorry about that. So I had 3 dream guests that I wanted to get on the show. You know, it was like, it would be a pinnacle, a sort of benchmark of when I made it with the podcast, I'd be able to get these people on. And I won't even tell you who they are. There'll be a surprise. One though has agreed to come on the show. And this person is an author. They have a new book coming out very soon. And I have a copy of that book that's not even out yet. I don't even know how far along in the publishing process it is. It's supposed to be out soonish, maybe a few months from now. And I have a copy of that book. And so, of course, I was planning on doing an unboxing video. Because I always do those. They're just sort of fun, quick, and easy videos to share things with you guys. But and when I do these unboxing videos, I always I'll mark out my address. I really need a P.O. box or something just so I can give that out. Actually, I want a better solution, but I won't digress onto that at the moment. So normally I always just mark out my address because, you know, the manufacturer doesn't care if you have their address. They would probably love for you to have their address. You know, they just would. But this one was addressed from this person's home. which I'm fighting kind of fanboy. So when I get this person on the podcast, I'm going to have to like really sort of sit down and like check my fanboy. Like, you know, don't get too crazy. When I interviewed J.L. Bourne, I kind of went a little fanboy because I loved the Day by Day Armageddon book so much. It kind of came out. So I'm going to have to check that and be professional. Or at least have fun. I imagine it'll just be a lot of fun with this person. That it won't be as rigid. But anyway, enough of that. So, Couch Potato Mike, what did you have for dinner?
Don't matter what we had for dinner.
All right. Didn't mean to step on your toes there. Did anything fun happen this weekend?
And then these aliens had me up on their ship, right? They was probing me and all that. Now this alien had a big head and big black eyes, and it was all bent over me. I said, "What do you want from me, alien?" And do you know what he said?
Tree-fitty.
Let me tell the damn story now. He said tree-fitty. And so I realized that it wasn't no alien. It was that goddamn Loch Ness monster again trying to trick me into giving him tree-fitty by dressing up like an alien. Don't that just beat off?
All right. Enough about this Loch Ness monster. What do we got coming up on the show today, Mike?
I'm gonna make love to your asshole.
What?
I'm sorry, children.
Mike, I don't think you're feeling well. I don't really think you're up for doing the show today. How about you sit this one out and you come back next week, rip-raring and ready to go. Okay, buddy?
You bet. Goodbye.
All right. So I guess it's going to end up being just another solo episode. Mike must have accidentally eaten a pizza full of wacky mushrooms or goofballs or something. I don't know what happened, but Mike will be back next week with another podcast. And I think we can wing it this week. I know, Catch Show Mike adds a lot of value, but we'll struggle through. We will manage. So what we have coming up today is what we have coming today is a lot of driving, survival, defensive driving, those kinds of tips. So a listener in California, I'm sorry, except for your weather. Oh God, I bet your weather's so much nicer than ours. You know what? This, and I don't want to say year because 2017 just began, so obviously not this year, but you know, in the past several months since summer to now. And now that it's winter, just in January, for the past 6 months, Tennessee weather has been like this. Flood weather. Not flooding, but literally raining every single day. Every day. The entire summer. It would take off a day, and then it would rain another week. And then it would take off a day, and then it would rain another week. So the wettest summer that I remember... period, and I tried to corroborate this with, other things to see actually measurable, like, was it the wettest summer? At the time I didn't really see anything and then I forgot about it. So maybe I'll go back and look at some point. So we went from like the rainiest, floodiest season ever to a drought so bad for a few months that pretty much like all of East Tennessee was just wildfire burning down. Gatlinburg, horrible, Gatlinburg's messed up. A lot of the, South Carolina border, East Tennessee, the fingertip over there, wildfires devastating it. Then back to flood weather. Flood, drought, flood. What the fuck is going on with that? I just had to sort of bitch about that. Because I don't remember a week in the past... I don't remember the last day I didn't see rain. It's been weeks. We had snow for a day, which then just melted the next day, because now it's back up to in the 60s, high 60s or so, leaving the ground. The ground is becoming a mud pit. It's like not even a little mud pit, but just I think I'm going to, my house is going to sink into the ground. But anyway. So yeah, this California listener was asking about some defensive driving tips and techniques. I have some thoughts on that, and today I will share them. So, first up, my uncle taught me to drive when I was a teenager. And he did not teach very well. But he did give me one piece of information that has served me for many years. The one piece of information that has so far, you know, knock on wood, kept me from getting in any crashes, any altercations, any wrecks, any of that. And that is, every other person on the road is a fucking idiot. Stay away from them and watch them. You know, that's it. Basically treat every other driver on the road like they're an idiot. Because they probably are. They probably are. And just stay away from them. Tailgating will get you in a crash. Letting people tailgate you will get you in a crash, you know. And even when I'm driving, I tend to keep a personal bubble around my car. I don't want anyone really beside or in front of me. So I will speed up if need be to get out in a clearing. I will, you know, move lanes. Basically, I just try to always have like a buffer area, which keeps me away from the idiots. So as long as I'm not actively being an idiot behind the wheel, I should be good in theory. And so far in practice, since I've not gotten to a wreck in, I had many years of driving, 15, 16, 17, 18, many years of driving. So yeah, rule number one, treat every driver like an idiot. And I have not seen that really on any like defensive driving list. Like they have like their four main rules for defensive driving, you know, and this and that, but that's not really one of them. And it's blunt and it works. So on Survival Punk Podcast and the blog, I talk about situational awareness fairly often. And a key... So, while you're practicing your situational awareness, you don't want to limit it just to walking around or, you know, your day-to-day activity. You want to extend that to your driving as well, is what I'm trying to say. That I'm having some stomach discomfort here. So, yeah. While you're driving, you also want to practice your situational awareness. The same things you do not in a car. I'm having trouble like explaining how this. So, for example, you go to a restaurant, you make sure you can see and know where the exits are at. While you're driving, you want to make sure you know where your exits are at. And I don't just mean like exits from the highway. I mean, there are cars around you. You want to know and have a way to get away and away from them. So,
all right. So yeah, situational awareness in a car. Pretty much all the rules that you apply in your everyday situational awareness, you need to apply while driving. So practice it. Be aware. Don't zone out. It can be hard sometimes. I know. So yeah, I know my generation is really bad about this, but put the damn cell phones down. I mean, I will make phone calls on my phone. Not that I do that often. I don't actually like talking on the phone very much. But I used to not be as personally strict on texting and messaging and whatnot while driving. It's kind of scary. There's a lot of crashes, a lot of deaths. There's a lot of like personal near misses from fooling on the phone. So I don't, I just put it down. I just don't even, you know, it's not, I unless I'm using the GPS on it, I don't even want to see the screen the entire time I'm driving. And if it starts vibrating or ringing or something, you know, if I get a call, it really pisses me off because I don't want to answer while driving either. I will plan and make a phone call, but then that's, you know, I'm prepared for that and it's not pulling me out of my concentration of driving. So just don't do it, you know. And no, there are a lot of laws against it. So that's something to be aware of, that messing around on your phone while driving, one, could get you killed. And if you get killed, you have failed at survival. You know, this is the Survival Punk Podcast. If you die, you didn't pay attention in class, kid, so survive. And getting a ticket because you're texting someone something stupid, it's not worth it. Ticket or whatever. Especially, we already covered death. But yeah, don't just put it down. I think we've covered this, but I might just touch on it real quick. Maintain proper distance when driving, you know, and that was the rule that I learned from my uncle, really. But you know, don't tailgate people. If you tailgate someone, you're a fucking dick. I hate tailgaters, so don't do it, and don't let yourself be tailgated. Either brake check them, you know, not if it's going to cause an accident where you might get injured. Just enough to let them know, hey, you're being a dick, you should probably back off, or let them go around, or just get out of the way. Like, yeah, I don't want to be rear-ended because someone's a fucking asshole trying to, you know, get ahead of me that is not even going to get to their destination any faster than I am. There is nothing better than someone being a jackass, whipping around you, speeding past, and then you see them at the stoplight and you're like, ah, how'd that go, asshat? So yeah, that's sort of James's tips on defensive driving, just driving in general, driving etiquette, driving safely. So next I want to cover, and I'm not an expert by any means, but I do know, you know, I know things and I can share. I know things. I know people. Come on now. Yeah. So how to tell if you're being followed, you know, and everyone like, I don't know, not everyone, like me and some of my friends, you know, that we grew up in the 80s and we watched a lot of spy movies because the 80s, we still, for a little while, we still had the Cold War. And I, my bread and butter growing up with spy movies, and every movie ever, I think we're being tailed, you know. So how do you tell if you're being tailed? Well, you're probably not. I mean, honestly, you're probably not. You know, you can play out your childhood spy fantasies in your head, and it's fun, you know, it's fun to a degree, but how do you tell if you're being followed for real? You know, first of all, if you're on a normal, like, street, you're not on the interstate, go ahead and make four turns, left or right, doesn't matter, just keep them consistent. So, four left turns, four right turns, which is a circle. And no one is actually, like, intending on doing that. No GPS ever is like, turn left, turn left, turn left, turn left. And unless you screwed up so bad that you turned against the GPS. See, no, actually, no, it would tell you to turn around. So, yeah, if you do the four turns like that, thus making a circle, going back to where you started, and someone continues to follow you through that, one, they're a bad tail, they're bad follower. They're not good at their job of tailing you. They suck, and it's pretty obvious that they are following you. So we'll talk about what to do if they are following you. If you're on an interstate, one of the tips you can do. Obviously, the interstate, you're not going to like, do not make a J turn on the interstate. No brake turns. Yes, it makes the ladies hot, but it's not worth dying for. So what you can do is just get off, just pick a random exit, get off of it, you know, so either they need to get off on that exit, or they're following you, and then immediately get back on. Get off the exit, get back on. There's really no reason for someone to do that unless they're following you. I mean, it's just not going to happen. So if you get off, get back on, they get off, get back on, right behind you, probably being followed. So what happens if it escalates? It goes from you think you're being followed to you are now being chased. So either it was being followed, or you cut someone off and it was their worst day ever and they snapped out and they've gone full on psycho road rage, or they're just a psycho anyway, or they're, you know, Leatherface and they want to eat your skull. Whatever. So what do? You remember earlier when I said, don't mess with your phone? Disregard that in this case. Just go ahead and call the police. You know, and I'm an anarchist. I don't really like to involve the police in things. But this is one of those times where it's like, okay, you know, taking the law in your hands, pulling your concealed carry, whipping it out the window and shooting it at someone who you cut off and now they're irate and trying to run you off the road, probably won't look good for you in the court. But pulling out your cell phone, calling the police, saying you have a maniac chasing you, they have your cell phone, they'll know where you're at, you can tell them, that would be the best bet to do. Do not, while whilst being chased, do not drive home. One, they could be a psycho, note where you live, and just come back later and murder your whole family. But I know you're a trained marksman. You have lots of guns. But what happens if you're not at home and your wife and kids are there alone and your wife's in the bathtub and your kids are on their tablet not paying attention and they break in and shoot your whole house up? You just don't even take that chance. So yeah, don't go home. Don't stop driving. This is not a good time to pull over and get a burger. Nope, that can wait. So if you call the police, just keep driving while you wait for them to deal with it. If that's not an option, if you don't have a cell phone, if you can't call for whatever reason, drive to the police station. Get out there. If for some reason you can't do that, you can't call the police, and you can't drive to a police station, you're out in the middle of the sticks, bumfucked Egypt, as we like to call it around here, or down the street, and you don't have phone reception, you don't know where the police station is, or it's too far. It's too far if you'll be able to safely make it to, which the suggestion may not even work in that situation, but drive to a very busy public place. Truck stops sometimes they'll work. A lot of times those gas stations or whatnot will have police hanging around. They frequently visit. A lot of times they are armed. A place that you can pull up to and get inside real quick. That's, you know, on the list of priorities, not the list of priorities, the list of that you want to do, that needs to be, you know, last resort. Like, can't call the cops, can't go to the cops. It's not last resort. Last resort would be to try to escape them, to try to lose them. Because that could escalate the situation even worse. You know, you may have, like, just some asshole that then gets enraged and then decides, oh, you know, I was just fucking around, but now I want to kill this person. So, you never know. And I would rather the police intervene and take care of it. and you dealing with the situation kind of needs to be last resort. I wouldn't. So I mentioned that you may have cut off someone and then, you know, infuriated them. Don't be a dick and don't cut off people. Don't, like, if you follow the rules I laid out at the beginning of staying away from people, treating everyone else like an idiot and just not getting around them, you really won't have this problem to a degree. You know, you could just have a psycho that's like, that motherfucker's driving a red car. I hate red cars. I'm going to kill him. You never know. So following road etiquette will help in this situation, for sure. So if you can't do any of those, then you can try disabling the car, their car, not your car. And I am almost remiss to mention this, except for possibly in a shit hit the fan scenario, this may be a tactic that you could use. Of course, if you're armed, you get a few more options, you know, i.e. shooting out the wheels or whatever. And then there's if, well, no, I'd say the police sometimes will do that fishtail technique where they'll sort of nudge your back in, your back wheel, to try to get you to spin out. If you're being followed, then you're probably not going to be able to do that unless you drop behind them and then come up and fishtail them. But what you can do is basically slam on the brakes and let them rear end you, which could, obviously, your trunk, your boot, if you're in the UK, does not really have a lot of vital car components in it. It's empty space. You'll take out a tail light. You may crush up the back end onto a tire, maybe. Usually it's still drivable, but not always. But it should be fine. There's not really engine components back there, unless you're like an electric car or Tesla, you know. Should be fine. Them running their front end into your rear end, giggity giggity, there's a lot of, all of their engine components are up there. Damaging the radiator is fairly easy. Slamming into someone's rear end will probably demolish it. There are a lot of other engine components in there that would disabling their car is a very high likelihood of what will happen. And then you can just leave. Worst case scenario, you get charged with leaving the scene of a crime. Maybe vehicular. There's a lot of things that can go wrong in that. In a shit hit the fan scenario, to keep it in your tool belt of something you could use, yes, remember that, you know, your rear end can destroy their front end and their day will be a lot worse. Do not do that in a non-shit hit the fan, in a now a rule of law society, unless there is, without a shadow of doubt, if you don't do that, you will die. Rule number one of the Survival Punk podcast, you've got to survive. So, yeah, let's move on. I don't want to keep talking about that. We're not going to red dawn up this podcast. I just wanted to make you aware of it if for some reason you weren't. Wow, this podcast is kind of juking along. It may be a short episode. You know, since Cash Flow Mike wasn't feeling well, you know, we couldn't really banter a whole lot, so sucks. Hopefully he's feeling better next week and, you know, he'll be able to rejoin us. So what if your front wheel drive is disabled for some reason, or what if to escape from chasers you need to drive backwards? You know, and how fast can you drive backwards? How fast can you effectively maneuver backwards? Well, that depends on how you drive backwards. If you drive the standard way of sort of craning your head and looking in the back, you know, using your mirrors, you know, all of your mirrors, then you probably will not effectively drive backwards very well. probably a year ago, I saw an episode of what was one of my favorite shows, The Mythbusters, and I really miss it. And I've been geeking it out recently watching Adam Savage has a YouTube channel, Tested, and nothing, well, he's got some one-day builds that are really interesting, and I like those. So, but anyway, there's an episode of Mythbusters where they were testing the myth of basically like in the action movie where people are like, it's a car chase and one of the cars is driving backwards. How fast can the car drive backwards? How well can you maneuver while driving backwards? And is it plausible? And they were not having any luck. Not at all. They put up like traffic cones and they're trying to like swallow them in between them. And mostly they just wiped out the cones. They weren't doing very well. You know, they didn't just want to call the myth busted because they like to be thorough. And I like that. So they got in a police driving instructor. And he taught them specifically how to defensively drive backwards. And I'm sure you can look on YouTube and maybe find a clip of this video or maybe even find other people demonstrating this technique. It didn't really look very hard. And if you just practice it the next few times you have to back out of somewhere or drive anywhere, you will quickly see that this is a far superior way of driving backwards. And in a situation where you needed to drive backwards or had to drive backwards to escape someone, or like imagine having to like quickly get down like a long windy like not road a long windy driveway that you couldn't back up in to get away, you know, obviously using your mirrors and, you know, looking around normally is not going to help, but this technique, which is just super easy, I'm gonna talk about it. So yeah, I'm gonna try to explain something that's better to be seen visually. But instead of just looking at your mirrors or craning your neck, you basically want to put one hand, generally your hand facing your door in America. That would be your left hand. You know, Britain, UK, other countries like that, you'd want to use your right hand. Basically, turn your entire torso at the waist as much as possible and use your hand in the center console, the center, whatever you need to brace yourself. But you want to plop your torso dead in the middle, like if you have bucket seats and not a bench seat, then you want to basically be in between your seats there so that your head is in the center and you're looking dead out your back window and you have your left hand in America, your right hand in UK, if you're driving things like the Kia C'D. Yeah, you keep one hand on there. If you're driving a stick shift, well, I guess in reverse, you don't need to change gears. Once it's in reverse, there's only one reverse. So, you know, throw it in reverse. And then that's it. I mean, you use your left hand to steer the wheel, and then you use your other hand to brace your body and look down the center of your car out that window. And damn, does it work. You know, I have juked backwards with that with perfect control and not like, not wiggling too far from one side to the other, not losing control. Because, you know, sometimes with the wheels in the front, you can kind of lose control. The wheels the other way, you can kind of lose control. But with this method, it's as easy as I literally just told you. Just get your body in that middle. I have juked it down some driveways backwards like this. And, you need practice. Like, whenever I get the chance, I am happy to practice this technique. And it's fun and it's very efficient. So, however, if you're not using that method to drive backwards, you need to start. So that's my driving backwards tip. Maybe it'll save your life. I guess I don't have a lot in this episode. I have some things for winter. I'm not going to cover winter driving. One, I live in Tennessee. Right now, in January the 18th, it's like in the 70s. We have had a snow day this year. The snow was on the ground for about 24 hours, and then it went back up to the 60s and melted and left, you know, a mud puddle. So, yeah, I am not the person. I have drove on snow and ice successfully many times when I've done it. Just basic common sense, which I know a lot of people, especially here in the South, do not have common sense. But, you know, you just drive like you're on eggshells. You don't make fast accelerations. You don't make fast stops. If you're sliding, you turn to the side. That's as complicated as I'm getting. I'm sure there's a winter driving podcast you can go find. I'm sure Jeff Radke from the Lost Skills podcast would love to do an episode on driving on snow and ice. He lives in Wisconsin. He knows a lot more than I do. You know, for the most part, here in the South, we can usually just wait. You know, year before last, I think we had a major ice storm that was like, you know, a state of emergency. I know it was thin, but ice storm, because we're not prepared for that. We're just not. We don't really have like any plows. It's terrible. And that lasted for 7 days straight, and I was stranded at home for 7 days straight. No big deal. I'm a prepper. It happened, but, you know, and that was the safest thing. And that, you know, I saw that hole in my preps where I ordered snow chains after that. And about 2 or 3 weeks after that, I got to use them, and they really work. They work great. So that's, I'm not, one more thing I want to add. And I saw this recently, and I was kind of looking for some tips and tricks on the internet to, you know, make sure I had all my bases covered. And it was all the same stuff that, you know, I talked about. And then, you know, but I saw one tip, and I thought it was so good, and I just hadn't thought about it that way that I was going to share it. So in winter, keeping your gas tank filled is a good practice as a prepper anyway. You know, never getting your gas tank, you know, on the E. I know I did it last night, whatever. Never getting your gas tank, you know, low and empty. You know, just for all the other reasons. Like, one, you know, like I use it as a backup. I use it as a generator to power my backup battery system if an emergency, I needed to do that. You know, if the emergency went longer than my backup battery system had power to power. So having a full tank of gas is a full tank of energy. So, you know, and obviously not running out of gas in an emergency, being able to run your heater if you're stranded on the side of the road, you know, all those reasons that we know we should keep our gas tank filled. I saw one more and I'm like, damn, that makes sense. That's a good idea. And, you know, on some vehicles, it's not that big of a deal. On some vehicles, it could really be a big deal. A full tank of gas adds a pretty decent amount of weight to your vehicle, giving you better traction. I just never really thought about that. But, yeah, gas in its liquid form is pretty heavy. I don't know the exact amount of weight of liquid form. I know water is 7 points. I think it's almost 8 pounds per gallon. So, you know, you're driving in a vehicle that has 12, 16, 20 gallons more, you know, of a truck or whatever, you have a lot of gallons in there. You know, even my small, I think my Kia Rio, AKA the C'D, I think it has a 12, 13 gallon tank. So, you know, 12 gallons times 7, I don't do math. That's a considerable amount of weight. That's a person or so. So yeah, that's another reason to keep your gas tank filled in the winter, especially. You know, maybe in the summer, keeping it not as filled to have better fuel mileage would make sense, but probably not. That's that's all I really have. Yeah, I thought about doing some stuff on car kits, and to be honest, car kits will definitely be an episode of its own, and probably very soon. So there's that, and so I guess I'm not going to do a nutrition punk, because I kind of talked about, no, I didn't, that book that I got from that mysterious person, that was a nutrition book, but I guess we won't talk about that. I did get, and I'm excited to really like dig into it and start practicing it with Couch Potato Mike when he feels better, obviously, because he's, you know, he's not feeling that well right now. And I got a book on Krav Maga survival fighting techniques, and I was blown away. Like, the entire book is filled with full color photos. So it kind of takes me back to my childhood, actually. I've always been into martial arts, and you know, as a little kid, I'd go to the library and I'd check out books on, you know, karate, taekwondo, jiu-jitsu, whatever martial art it was. And then later, as you know, a teenager and an adult, I would buy said martial arts books, and they're always filled with photos, not always full color, but the best ones were like on that glossy stock, and they were like full color photos, you know, and it would be like so many pictures on a page to show, you know, how to do a move through its completion. And this is it. You know, and Krav Maga is one I've been interested in for years since hearing about it, you know, and it's, it excels in street fights. It excels in, you know, tactical police situations for neutralizing threats very effectively. And it has to be for so many police agencies around the world to choose Krav Maga as its fighting technique to neutralize threats. It really says something about the system, which is an Israeli defense system developed, I think, 60 years ago. Just from what I read real quick, I'm excited to sort of try some of these moves. I haven't really played around with the martial arts in several years since I had taken Muay Thai. And I love Muay Thai, and I miss sparring so bad. Kevin Cloak, if you're listening, I'll spar you anytime, buddy. It's hard. I guess it's hard. No, it can be hard to find friends who are willing to spar, you know, to box with you with a level head. And, you know, following sparring rules, i.e. you only hit as hard as you want to get hit, and you don't lose your temper. Like, if you hit me in the face, oh, that was a good shot, buddy, instead of, oh, you motherfucker, I want to kill you, you know. I love Couch Potato Mike, but he could not spar. He would lose his temper. And it would not be fun, you know, whereas, you know, I have fought much better fighters, you know, in Muay Thai, a lot of, jiu-jitsu people, and, you know, you get pegged in the head and you feel your brain rattle around, and, I just laugh it off, you know. I'm like, good shot. I let my guard down. You got me. Good shot. You know, just as when, you know, I'm fighting and I get a good shot, I expect, you know, like that nod, like, or, you know, if you're fighting someone who's, you kind of always want to like match the skill up. Like, you don't really want to like punch fourth graders in the face till they like fall over. I mean, that's not really fun, you know, unless they're bratty or whatever, you know. And, in the Krav Maga unboxing video I shot, I had talked about, when I took Muay Thai, I was sparring, and there's this kid that just like had trained Taekwondo for a while. So all he wanted to do was kick, you know, he just wanted to kick me. And, you know, we had gloves and feet pads on, but he just wouldn't like, he just kept going for the same, you know, kicks. And I would just step in to where his kick was useless and would just like slap my side, you know, powerlessly, uselessly, and I would tag him in the mouth, you know, and I just kept going on. Like, I'd beat him in the head and just, I just kept waylaying his face because he wasn't blocking his head and he was just focusing on kicking me. And, you know, I had to stop and I was like, look, dude, if you keep kicking me, I'm going to keep punching you in your face. And, you know, friendly conversation. You know, I knew the guy from school, so, you know, I wasn't being an asshole. I was just trying to help him, you know, not get his face crushed in. So I can't remember if he did stop, but I think he did. I think he did, you know, start throwing some punches, and it got a little bit more fun. But, yeah, the joys of sparring. Yep. I will spar anyone. Come at me, bros. I guess with that, we're going to wrap up this episode because I'm recording it the morning of the publish. So I've got to get this published. It's at 46 minutes. It's plenty of time. Hey, get this published and get the show notes up. Get everything thrown up, get everything finished, and then I got to go to sleep. So it's been a fun episode, guys. If you have show suggestions or you have anything, show suggestions, if you have questions, commentaries, if you have comments, please go to survivalpunk.com and leave it in the episode where we can all talk in the community. Anything else, you can always send to james@survivalpunk.com. So, yeah. Man, if you guys are playing the drinking game of having to take a shot every time I say Jeff and LR are probably the only two standing. Everyone else, you're dead. I'm sorry. Hopefully not behind the wheel. I didn't even talk about drunk driving, but don't do it. Ever. With that, there is a Survival Punk Army membership. I would love for you to join it. There's stuff in there. It helps the show. That's all I got to say. DIY to have a good laugh at your co-host, guys. Love you, Catch Potato Mike.